Blog Talk Radio.
We the best. Welcome to the war room. We got Dez, Kim, Jimmy, PJ, B. Austin, the hot block commander.
How you wanna end up 1 or 2 hour show? To keep the brain running with the premise to talk sports on a national level. Roll with the topic, sort of like the rubber. When it's game time, they like the Fab Five during prime time. Sports conglomerates speak their minds a little bit. For sports medicine, sports veterans and greats. The 4 for 26, so the war in Kuwait. It's the war room with five knights at the round table. Five silly guys, diversified and educated.
What's good, sports fans? You are once again live in the War Room, brought to you by War Room Sports. I'm Devin McMillan, and I'm joined by my co-host Jimmy Williams and Akil Bayon. The NFL preseason is down to its final week, and college football starts now. So, of course, we're going to hear from college football guru Fred Perdue about national title contenders. So be sure to join us right now in the JW Philly Realty chat room at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom. Or join us on Facebook or Twitter at War Room Sports to get into the conversations. You can also call us directly when we open up the Digital Extreme Tech Hotline at 323-410-0012. If you love our show, then you got to check out our partners. So for more of the very best in sports talk, make sure you tune in to Roy and Chris on the Broad Street Line every Tuesday at 6 p.m. And check out the listings for Daniel and Brandon on Sports Trap Radio. Both of these shows are also on Blog Talk Radio. But don't worry, if you can't catch them live, you can hear and watch these guys and all of our other partner podcasts and webcasts at warroomsports.blogspot.com. And in addition, don't forget to catch us in syndication 3 times on Fridays on newvibradio.com. That's 7 a.m., 1 p.m., and 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And on Sundays and Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time on fatsradio.com. What's good, fellas?
Man, you already know, man. Just trying to stay out of the madness, man. You know, it's hot outside. It's crazy.
There's madness wherever you go.
Yeah.
What's going on in brotherly love? Heard something about some fishing thing going on
out
there.
Catfish is at an all-time high. You got dudes talking to dudes and all that. But I'm just trying to stay out. I ain't making no noise. I'm trying to stay out of trouble, man. Just, you know, trying to enjoy sports and looking forward to this upcoming NFL season. They can't get here fast enough, good brother.
So it's like a mass manti going on up there?
Oh, man, yeah. Yo. My thing is this, though, because, yo, after the manti tail situation, after the movie Catfish, after the TV show Catfish.
The TV show, yeah.
Yo, dudes continuously get caught up in nonsense. And, I mean, females, too. But, you know, it just shows you how, man, how lonely some people are, yo, or how thirsty or you know, how scrambling they are, man.
Talking
but it is,
to
it
people
is.
On the internet that you do not know. And you won't
have
to look foolish, you know, in the long run.
Yeah, man. And y'all women got to chill, too, yo, because I think more men are getting trouble due to screenshots than firearms these days, man. Screenshots get people hurt. But that's a whole other story, man. Let's talk sports, man, because I'm really trying to stay out of the madness, man. I'm just waiting for football season, man. But, you know, as always, we got our stories we have to go through and talk about
all
what
right,
happened
well,
to people while they were on the run.
Yeah, let everybody know what happened this week while they were on the grizzle.
While You Were On The Grind is brought to you by DirecTV. If you'd like a better TV experience than cable has to offer, which includes the NFL Sunday Ticket, listen. Football season is coming close. You gotta have the ticket. As of right now, there's one place to get it, and that's DirecTV. Go to warroomsports.com, click on the DirecTV logo, get hooked up, get the ticket so you can watch football like a real man and don't watch the Red Zone channel and claim you watched all the games. You know, y'all be frauding. Anyway.
You better hurry up. Season starts next week.
Listen, man. These stories, y'all. I'm just looking at these stories, y'all, and let's just jump right into it, man.
Cracking and
Lamar burning. Odom from Rhode Island. I mean, from NY. You know, one of the best all-around players I've ever seen in terms of having a toolbox. Yo,
yeah.
He has a complete toolbox, man. This guy has been missing for 3 days on a crack binge. What are your thoughts on this whole Lamar Odom situation, y'all?
Yeah, when I heard that, like, it was crazy just hearing that whole language dealing with the dude, L.O. I don't know if I want to call myself a supporter, a fan, or whatever, but, you know, I've always liked Lamar Odom in his game. Like you said, he had a crazy toolbox. He didn't always, you know, use the key and open it up, but the dude is skilled. But into his personal life a little bit, first of all, I found out that the situation was a little different as first reported. They said he wasn't missing. They said on Sunday he came home and he had a fight with his wife, Khloe Kardashian, and the fight stemmed around the fact that she tried to hit him with an intervention because he is doing some kind of drugs. And, of course, the reported drug of choice for Lamar that we've heard is crack. That's a little extreme right there, Lamar, if you're doing
yo,
crack.
Yo, must be on the pack, right?
So they basically said the intervention made him mad because, you know, crackheads, you know, get a little offended, a little sensitive, a little angry. So he left. And they said he wasn't missing. They said Khloe knew exactly where he was, but he was holed up in a hotel room with friends for 3 days, you know, trying to shake his crack habit. So I don't know what's going on with LO, man. I just pray the dude, you know, gets his life together. I hope that these are erroneous reports as far as what he was using, because that's just a little harsh, man. You know, Whitney said it was alive, rusted dead, that crack is whack. So, come on, hello.
Crack is definitely whack, and, you know, listen, man.
I don't know, man. I was banging 7-gram rocks and finishing them because that's how I roll. I have one speed. I have one gear. Go.
But my thing is this, though, right? All right. Let's take it back a little bit. Lamar Odom has always been, for some reason, a kind of a sympathetic figure, but also one of the more transparent athletes that we've had. We know his situation in terms of his personal life and struggles with his family, with him losing a child, with his addiction to candy, his whole marriage to the Kardashian. Like, Lamar Odom has been one of the more transparent athletes. But to hear this story, initially I heard it as Lamar Odom's addicted to drugs, and I mean, considering he has an addictive personality, as documented through his, you know, use of candy, and people may think I'm joking when I say candy, but if you watch how the documentary on how he consumed candy,
like literal sweet candy,
like literal sweet candy, he had a huge addiction. So he had an addictive personality to begin with. So it wasn't shocking to hear crack. Kind of like, you know, saddened me a little because, listen, man, I grew up in the inner city, so you know, you deal with addicts and people struggling. You know, to deal with drugs, and I've never once heard of an ex-crack addict, yo. So when I heard it, I'm like, damn, I hope it's not crack, because crack is you know, it's a strong thing, man.
It's a life destroyer, man. It's definitely a life destroyer. You can't
I mean,
stay away from
crack.
Crack
has women's,
I think is pretty good advice. Unless you can manage it socially, Dan. If you can manage it socially, then go for it. But not a lot of people can, you know.
Exactly.
Not a lot of people can.
Word to Charlie Sheen, man. Crack has had mothers literally sell their children. Like, so to hear a professional athlete with money and access to be addicted to, you know, a drug of this magnitude is crazy. Now, I'm not the first professional athlete we've heard, but probably
Ray Donovan,
one of the better
children.
You know, no doubt. Also, you know, there's a couple other athletes. Shout out to Richard Dumas, you know. Shout out to John Lucas Sr. But I'm just saying, like, so it's not the
Josh
first
Hamilton.
Athlete we've ever heard.
Shout out to Josh Hamilton.
Josh Hamilton struggles, man. But, you know, so at the end of the day, I'm not even going to make jokes about it. I actually wish him well. You know, I hope he can rebound from this.
Well, this is worse.
Because Lamar Odom is one of the more talented players. Go ahead, Kill.
This is worse because, remember, he had a problem with marijuana when he failed a couple of NBA drug tests. And then he vowed, you know, to never let his team down like that again. So, I mean, I guess between the whole reality show and his game falling off tremendously and being traded back and forth, I guess there's supposedly their marriage is on the rocks, and I guess he said, hey, let me turn to the crack, which was definitely whack. But prayers go out to him, if that's the case.
And they say marijuana is the gateway drug?
Yep.
Yeah, man. You know.
Damn, he kicked the gate down. Come on, L.O.
I don't necessarily believe that, and, you know, I think that's funded by pharmaceutical companies, but that's a whole other story that I'm not getting into now. And I'm not even a weed smoker, but at the end of the day, when you look at the studies, they're all BS because they're all funded by, you know, Big Pharma. But anyway, let's move on to another story. Man,
more drug use.
Story. Yeah, more drug use, yo. You know what I mean? You know, shout out to Nancy Reagan. She's sponsoring this part of our show. But Aaron Hernandez, his friends say that he was paranoid, PCP smoking, gun carrying nut. Basically, that recently, you know, he's been out of his mind, and a lot of it comes from smoking that butt naked. You know, so, you know, shout out to Lonzo.
He's on the
he was smoking that butt naked, that sherm, that PCP. But, you know, what do you guys have to say about this, man?
You know, I mean, it's crazy because, you know, the stories are coming out, you know, like you just alluded to, friends, and a lot of them, well, most, I think all of them, don't really want to be identified, you know, and they don't want to be linked to these comments. But there's a story coming out in an upcoming issue of Rolling Stone magazine that's going to kind of chronicle what these people have been saying about Aaron Hernandez. They just said after he signed that $40 million contract with the Patriots, he just became paranoid, and he thought that all of the people that he hung around and, you know, all of the quote-unquote thugs that he hung around, he thought that these people were eventually going to kill him. So he actually went to Bill Belichick and told him of some of his paranoia. He didn't really tell Bill Belichick that he was, you know, smoking a lot of marijuana, and of course he didn't tell him that he was smoking angel dust. So, you know, Bill didn't get that part of the story, but he kind of told him to lay low, because if too much popped up, this was like a year before he was accused of this murder, he told him if too much stuff popped up, then we were going to have to cut you. So, I mean, I guess he laid low enough until these charges came out. But you all know the story with this. You know, once this murder charge came out with Olden Lloyd, then you heard about a double murder that he may be involved in Boston the year prior. You heard about him shooting another man in the face. So it's like everything just came tumbling down on him. But his lawyers, they just, you know, they keep saying that their client is eventually going to be exonerated. But I don't know. This rough crowd that he hung with, I think he was a little paranoid of them himself. So,
you know what this calls for? This calls for playmakers to come back on the air. Remember the NFL? It's like word in the street, they boycotted playmakers because, oh, this just shows things that really isn't true about the NFL. But now from Titus Young getting locked up 4 times in 2 weeks to Aaron Hernandez having possibly 3 bodies on his hand to, you know, all the other just shenanigans that go on every summer, they should bring back playmakers. But in terms of Aaron
playmakers
Hernandez,
playmakers, it doesn't look so far-fetched now. Like, it looked like they went way overboard when that show was on. It looked like they were just way out on an extreme. But
I mean,
it's
one of those
look
things,
so far-fetched now.
I was just saying, it's one of those things where, I mean, they were partnered with ESPN and they got to flex their muscle. They, you know, and I don't even think that they said it was overboard. It's just like, yo, we don't want this out there. And it's unfortunate,
because not the NFL. I'm just talking about a lot of fans I know who used to watch it. Man, you know, this show is taking stuff to the extreme. But now we know why the NFL.
I get what you're saying.
now
but,
we
know
why they wanted to get it off the air so quick.
Yeah, but you know what, though? Yo, I can see that, whatever, taking the extreme, because, yo, this case is just so extreme. It's like, I still have a hard time wrapping my head around the fact that a guy who plays in the NFL for the New England Patriots, mind you, catching bodies, like, you know, and this has happened. All these stories come out, and more stories will come out. Like, me and Austin did a video about this a while ago. We talked about how many stories will come out until this is all over with. And it's still difficult for me to, like, yo, this is real?
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy, man. It's crazy because this dude basically was living a double life.
Yeah, more stuff that they were saying is that, you know, the drugs and the emotional instability behind the loss of his father led to his paranoia. But a friend said, you know, dude has been twisted on dust for more than a year now, and that's when all of this crazy stuff started. So I'm looking forward to reading this Rolling Stone article when it comes out, because right now we just have excerpts from it. But, yeah, it's...
Hold up, sir. Whoa. Yeah. To all the killers and the $100 billers.
Yo.
You definitely
killer and $100
killer and $100
Yeah, no
billing.
Doubt. Listen, man, on a lighter note, what you guys think about Miley Cyrus twerking at the VMAs?
Lighter note, I think that was drug-induced as well.
Yo.
Like, no, the funny thing about that, Jimmy, that's like the biggest story of the week, like, in life, period. Miley Cyrus twerking at the VMAs. Your wet girl loss.
It's the state of the world we live in, man. Like, you know, and she doesn't want to be like, she's fighting the whole Hannah Montana thing so bad that,
right,
you know,
identity
first
crisis.
Of all, yo, it's like, yo, you're not even twerking anything to begin with. You have no buns. But the fact that this
yeah,
is national news.
I mean, that she's a big star, and it just shows you how far entertainment goes in this country. Sports and entertainment, man, biggest things we have in this country, because it makes
this
everybody forget about everything that's going on in the world and their personal life.
This is true.
But the whole Miley thing, like you said, Jimmy, she's trying to escape Hannah Montana. Like, she grew up and became filthy rich as this little Disney girl, and, you know, she's 20 years old now, and what she's been doing lately, I think she's claiming her identity, claiming her adulthood, claiming her independence, but I think she's going about it all wrong. There's a lot of mature things that you can do to tell the world, I'm no longer, you know, Hannah Montana. You don't have to turn into a smut, running around,
yeah,
you know, half naked, twerking all the time, trying to, it's just weird to me. And like you said, like the whole buns thing, first of all, it was nasty, because I don't know if that was just the natural state of her buns, or did she have on some shorts that parted her? You know, it was nasty. She looked like a raw chicken back then.
Yo, yeah, and people actually made that comparison and made the pictures. Like, she has what we used to call back in the day when we were in high school. We called Nosotol, and that's what
on that
she
medicine.
Has. She had a bad case of Nosotol, and you know, the fact that this made news, man, this makes me like, you know, yo. It is what it is, man. Like you said, sports and entertainment, man. You know, Killer Cam told y'all years ago, sports, drugs, and entertainment. That's what this whole country is about. And he was actually correct because, yo, it's bread and circuses, man. They give us Miley Cyrus twerking. Meanwhile, the country is getting ready to go to war with Syria, and no one's talking about that. But, you know, I'm off that, though. Doc Bay, do you have any thoughts? Because you work with kids a lot, and, you know, there are females that actually look up to Miley Cyrus. What do you think about the way she carries herself, yo?
Man, it's sad because it's almost like, okay, you're already famous, your dad is famous, you have a lot of money, but she's still looking for attention for what reason? Like, you want more money? Do you want more fame? I mean, you already, like, it seemed like the biggest thing when they interviewed her, they interviewed her and she said, hey, what happened? It hit Twitter like 300,000 tweets per minute, and that was like a record. So she was like, yes, I am the most tweeted about person in history right now. And, yeah, I mean, then sometimes she looks like – I'm not saying she looks like she's possessed with something or on with something, but it's like, what are you doing?
There's just another drug story.
Yeah, it's kind of sad. You know, prayers go out to her.
She sings her song. There was a song where she sings about Molly. So I mean, she out there doing. But you know what, fellas? This is the norm, though. Especially for these child stars, it's the norm. Like, they all grow up and wild out because, first of all, since you were a little kid, you know, everybody's been doing everything at your beck and call, to your whim. You know, everybody was sweating you because they want to be a part of it. They want a piece of the money and stuff like that. So as you get older, you think that you're entitled to certain things, and when the attention starts to fall off a little bit, they kind of lash out, you know, because they want that attention. I mean, look at Chris Brown. He out there wowing all the time. Michael Jackson did it in a totally different way. He just turned into a weirdo. You know, he wasn't.
Yeah, Michael Jackson start touching boys. Like, I mean, you know, it's It is, man. Yeah. And, but there are a lot of cases of those that don't turn this way. Yeah. A lot of things. I mean, you know, because I mean, there's so many reasons why, man. There's so many reasons why. But as time goes on, and as society changes, man, it just gets worse and worse. I don't know what's gonna happen.
Tevin
Campbell, he was in that hotel room with Lamar Odom cleaning up too. But like, yo, I don't know what to say about our country, yo, man. Like, this is the point now. There's no hope left, man. Do dope, fuck hope. Listen, real quick though, I got a tweet from Casey Mack at Casey Mack. I just want to put this out there for anybody listening. He said something is wrong with the chat room; it's not allowing him in. And I got a couple of people telling me that via text message, and I can't get in myself. So, for those listening, if you want to get us a question or something, you can put it on our Facebook page, facebook.com/WarBlueSports, or you can tweet me directly at JWTheBlueprint, or just send a tweet and use the hashtag WRS. But either way, we'll get your question put on air, or just call in when we open up the Digital Extreme Technology Hotline. We do realize that the chat room is having issues right now, but, you know, still holler at us, though. But anyway, that's one of the bigger stories of the week, man. It has nothing at all to do with sports, but we had to kind of talk about it. Another story that doesn't have something to do with sports, but I want to get talk to you about it anyway, and I am going to relate to sports. And that's the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington, and I Have a Dream speech. What did this mean to you, Doc Bay, when you know with this 50th anniversary? What did it mean to you?
I mean, it just shows how far our country and society has grown since that time. I mean, you know, a lot of times people will say, okay, racism is over, or some people say, hey, racism is alive and well. But just to understand where our country was at that time and where it is now, you know, it's sad that he wasn't able to see his dream live out. And it's almost like, you know, his words and his sentiments are going to have to reverberate throughout the years as we have racism going on and, you know, people killing each other over race or beating each other up or being prejudiced over race currently. I mean, it's almost like everybody needs to get up every morning and watch that and then go out and live their lives.
Yeah, before I get to Dev, I'd say for me, it brought up a lot of things. For one, how, of course, racism is still alive. It's definitely alive. But I think we live in more of a class system now. There's more social injustice, which is one of the things that Dr. King was fighting for before he was murdered by the government because, you know, he kind of moved away from, you know, just being about civil rights and being about human rights. And once he started fighting for human rights and people of different social classes, that's when he had to be eliminated by our government. But that's neither here nor there. So I kind of thought about that. And, Dad, let me get your opinion of what do you think about the 50th anniversary. Then I have a question for you, gentlemen. Go ahead.
I mean, you know my stance. You know what I'm saying? It's always good to see people get together because it wasn't just, you know, a black thing, you know, for the people who sit around and think that it's just a black thing. You know, there were people of all races and you know, colors, creeds, whatever, out there marching this time around and the last time around. But you know my stance on it. I just don't want people to do things now, and you know, while it's glorified, and then, you know, when it's over, then we just go back to, you know, living unrighteously and things of that nature. So it's like, if you're going to be a part of the cause,
man,
stay a part of the cause. You know, don't just show up in front because you think it's something that you have to do.
You know,
if you're
going to
live your life,
right,
a different way, then don't do it.
Yo, some cats were even ratchet at the anniversary. I saw cats tweeting and putting pictures on IG talking about, look what such and such got on. Like, you know, listen to this choir. It was nothing about what they were there for. They were still, like, sitting there judging people and talking greasy about people. But
because there's a big part of the population, Jimmy, that just wants to say that they were there for something. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
whether
true.
It's just the way it is.
Yeah, this is why I go to Latino at a strip club. But anyway, listen, though. Real quick, though, I have a question someone brought to me on social media. I was on Google+, and, you know, having a conversation about this, and, of course, we always talk sports. So someone said, if you had speaking of, you know, African-Americans and how far we've come, if you had to build a Mount Rushmore of African-American athletes, who would be on that Mount Rushmore of African-American athletes? I said that's an interesting question because, you know, you can go so many different ways with that. But I'm going to ask you, gentlemen, Ed. I'll start with you, Doc Bay. If you had to build your Mount Rushmore of African-American athletes, not necessarily the best athletes, but the Mount Rushmore, who would represent, you know.
Okay, let's go Jackie Robinson, Muhammad Ali, Wilt Chamberlain, and then Jim Brown beats out Michael Jordan for that fourth spot. There you go.
Okay.
Personally, in the context.
Hold on. Let me say, though, Dev. You said Muhammad Ali.
He said Ali, Wilt, Jim
Ali,
Brown, and Jackie Robinson.
Yeah.
And I was about to say,
in
the context of which Jimmy asked the question, because Akil said, you know, he beats Mike out for that fourth spot. I think in the context from which you asked the question, I don't think Mike comes anywhere near that mountain.
Mm-hmm.
I think they got a fence.
Yeah, you know what? Yeah, I had
to
put Jesse Owens before Mike, too. Yeah, Jesse Owens beats Mike out.
I like Akil's list. I would probably switch Wilt for Bill Russell. Something like that.
Yeah, I would too. I'm about to say, what did Wilt do? Wilt set the standard for fornication that all men want to reach, but outside of that, also, we have a check-in.
I was about to say, Wilt was good for race relations, though, because, you know, Wilt had white women, black women.
This is definitely true, but we could also go with Jack Johnson if that's the case, because he loved the white meat. Yeah. But anyway, we got a check-in at KCMax38, and it's funny because three of the four kill mentioned are on my list as well, but at KCMax says Jackie Robinson, Jim Brown, Ali, which are the same three I had, but I also had Bill Russell, but he puts up Arthur Ashe. I didn't even think about Arthur Ashe.
True.
Jackie Robinson, Jim Brown, Ali, and Arthur Ashe. I just found a question to be interesting, you know. And
so
I figured
like three
I'll
might
the
be
show.
Three of them might be universal, and so the
yeah.
fourth person
is that four? All right, well, okay, we gonna put AI.
You put Jesse Owens as the fourth person.
We gonna put AI in the fourth spot, man. Just cause. But anyway, yeah, you said Jesse Owens. That's a good one too. Like you know,
Sean
so Jesse
Stevenson.
Owens, Arthur Ashe, Bill
Stevenson
Bill Russell.
Already got Deshaun Stevenson got Abraham Lincoln on his neck, so. That's already a part of the
man.
You can throw him up there.
Abraham Lincoln was a racist who slept with men, but that's neither here nor there. yeah, so, you know, the 50th anniversary, that's our Mount Rushmore. Hit us up. Let us know who you would put on your Mount Rushmore of African-American athletes, if you could do so. Looks like all across the board, someone else checked in with those three. Jackie Robinson, Jim Brown, Ali are, like, unanimous. It's just that fourth spot that people are, you know, making a different choice. But all that being said, man, that's what happened while you were on the grind. Dev, let's get into some birthday shout-outs.
No doubt. All right, everybody. As usual, y'all know our birthdays.
My birthday, yay!
Are brought to you by Dr. Monique Roll, who was on the show last week telling you guys about foot sprains and Liz Frank injuries. Dr. Roll, of course, is of Alexandria Podiatry Associates, so for the best and comprehensive treatment of injuries to the foot, ankle, and lower extremities, visit Dr. Monique Roll of Alexandria Podiatry Associates, treating patients in the D.C., Maryland, Virginia area, and beyond. It's the DMV to everybody familiar. Visit alexandriapodiatry.org or call 703-379-0700 and make sure you tell them War Room Sports sent you. So just a couple of birthday shout-outs real quick. MLB pitcher was recently, like about 2 years ago, was with my Philadelphia Phillies. Roy Oswalt turns 36 today. One of Michael Jordan's three-headed center monster, Will Perdue, turns 48 today. Kill, you know, Kill is a Chicago Bulls fan, so that's one of your homies.
Yeah, he was happy.
Former Giants linebacker Carl Banks turns 51 today, and former NFL kicker who kicked until he was like 90, Eddie Murray turns 57 today. I like how I said he was 90 and he just turned 57 today. What did you say?
I was wondering whether that was Eddie Murray, the kicker, or Eddie Murray, the actual baseball player. It was a great baseball player named Eddie Murray, too.
Yeah, me too.
I was wondering
the Orioles.
Yeah.
Yo, and also, Dev, I got two more birthday shout-outs. For one, shout-out to Kyrie, the Skip Bayless of Battle Rap. Today is his birthday. you know, from OBR. And also, shout out to the king of pop. Michael Jackson's MJ. Birthday is also today, man. Got to give MJ a shout out, man. You know what I mean? Rest in paradise, MJ. So shout out to him on his birthday.
After Jimmy said he was touching boys earlier in the show.
Listen, man. I got to look past that because you made Thriller in the Bad album. So, you know. And also Off the Wall, too, because Off the Wall is underrated. Like, cats talk about Thriller and Bad, yo, but Off the Wall is at work, yo.
I actually think Off the Wall is better than Thriller. That's no diss because all three of them are like some of the greatest albums ever made.
Yo, that is the verses waiting to happen.
There
you think
go.
Off the Wall is better than Thriller?
I think Off the Wall is better than
I think Off the Wall might be better than Bad, yo. But Thriller is like the Illmatic of pop music, yo. It's like nothing. It's very short, and there's nothing, it's no skippable tracks, though.
Yeah, but that's just like you said. It's like the Illmatic is like, you know, his first real solo project where, you know, he shed the, I wouldn't say the shadow of the Jackson 5 because he was the Jackson 5, but he just, you know, let all that baggage off at the door, a.k.a. his brothers, and then went about his business.
Yo, we're going to have to put that out there for the people to decide, man, because that's a good one. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, all three of them are phenomenal albums. There's no diss at all.
That's what I was about to say. It's like,
yeah.
My order is like 1, 2, 3 in the order that he made them, but there's not that big of a gap between any of them. So.
Not at all. And the thing is, though, like, that are only three albums I consider, because after that, he was working out, you know what I mean?
The fourth best album is Invincible.
He's getting his J on.
I mean, you know, here's the thing, though. After those three albums, he had, like, great songs, but never again did he have a comprehensive album that just went from start to finish. That was amazing, but Invincible was okay. It's just, to me, those three albums are just, like, phenomenal. Any artist to put out those three albums is just ridiculous,
yeah,
yo.
Yeah, in a row, like.
In a row. But my personal order probably would be like Thriller, Off the Wall, then Bad. I see Dev has like Off the Wall at one. Or you got Bad at
one? Just in that order. Off the Wall, Thriller, and Bad. Just the order that
you got in the order that came out.
Yeah.
Order that came out. No doubt. Kill, you want to get on this?
I got Thriller, Off the Wall, Bad, Invincible.
All right, you got to play the same.
Kill,
Kill, it must be a song that Invincible Kill really mess with, though, because he keep bringing Invincible up. So I don't know. Oh, I look at the track.
It's
for Invincible.
It's funny. It's funny with Chris Tucker. Chris Tucker, and he's like, "Come on, man, come on."
I'm like, yo, it must be a song on Invincible that Kill really mess with, because he making sure we shout out the Invincible album, man.
Yeah, like,
anyway, man.
We asked the boy to put the three in order. Kill like the people on our Facebook page. We tell them to rank the ones on the page. Putting other stuff in it.
Yeah, this is definitely true, man.
So all shout right, out
man.
To
well,
those
are the birthday shout outs, man.
On their birthday.
Tell everybody to get in touch with us, though.
All right, everybody, you can check out our website at warroomsports.com. While you're there, be sure to sign up for the War Report. That's our weekly newsletter. Click on the Contact Us tab to send a message about our company, our show, to inquire about sponsorship and advertising opportunities. For general inquiries, email us at info@warroomsports.com. While you're browsing the site, be sure to click on Memorabilia so you can buy War Room Sports merchandise. You can click the blog tab to read our latest articles in the All's Fair in Sports and War blog. Then click the respective icons to like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter, subscribe to our iTunes podcast, download our free War Room Sports mobile app on your Android and iOS devices, and to watch our videos at WarRoomSportsTV.com. Join the JW Philly Realty chat room usually during the show. Like we said earlier, we're having some technical difficulties with that, so we might not be able to do that this week. So if you want to get with us, just hit us on Facebook, Twitter, or the chat room. Twitter is @WarRoomSports. Facebook is facebook.com/WarRoomSports. If you want to call in and talk to us, dial that Digital Extreme Tech hotline, 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk. But until we, you know, get a couple of you people on the line, we'll just talk about some hot topics real quick. And hot topics are brought to you by Audible.
Real quick, though, Dev, real quick. I just wanted to say it real quick, though. Kid, I was looking at this, yo. Invincible is not better than Dangerous album, yo.
I will put Dangerous in front of that. I think that's
Dangerous got the jaw jam with Heavy D. Remember the Time on it. Yo, it got Remember the Time on it. Yo, come on, man. It got Heal the World. It got Black or White. Yo, anyway, man, that's all I had to put out there, man.
So now I'm wondering if we should versus the two or if we should rank four. I don't know. We'll figure it out. Or both.
Yeah, because right after that one was History, then it was History, then Invincible, yo. And
yeah,
even history went hard, yo.
This one of History was like some of his best of from the prior album. So
yeah,
I rock History a lot just to listen to the old stuff, the better songs.
Yo, but listen, though, this that had the new songs on it, that also had They Don't Care About Us, and it had You Were Not Alone. Come on, man. Another day. My fault. All right. Go ahead, Bill. I'm sorry. I digress, man. I'm a huge Michael Jackson fan. Go ahead, bro.
All right. Well, Hot Topics are brought to you by Audible. Is your schedule too hectic to read as much as you want? Well, try audiobooks and kick back and let someone else do the reading for you. All you got to do is visit Audible and sign up for your free, yes, we said free trial, at audibletrial.com/warroomsports. In no time, you could be listening to the latest bestsellers, hands-free, stress-free, while getting other things done at the same time. I'm sure there might be a Michael Jackson book out there that somebody wants to listen to. Go to Audible
Trial. Man, there's tons of Michael Jackson books on Audible.
Yeah, go to audibletrial.com/warroomsports. And for 30 days, you can read that book, and however many you can read in 30 days, for free. So you better go ahead and do that. All right, man, the Pirates. A few days back, they lost that lead in their division. So they went out and retooled real quick. This is something that I never understood about baseball. Like, what's the point of having a trade deadline if, you know, you can still make trades after the trade deadline? But
yeah.
The Pittsburgh Pirates, they went out and acquired Marlon Byrd and catcher John Buck from the Mets on Tuesday. Marlon Byrd is actually in the midst of probably, you know, his best season. He's hitting .285, 21 home runs, 71 RBIs. And
yeah, when I saw this trade go down, I think that it's one of the trades where both teams did what they wanted to. I mean, the Pirates got the bats they needed to keep fighting in the NL Central, and the Mets got to unload a couple of veterans. But it just makes me think that baseball is like the only sport where, like, yo, players can be having their greatest season and will get traded in the middle of the season. Like, this doesn't happen in football. In basketball, it happens every so often. But in baseball, there are a lot of trades. Like, teams will dump and move forward, and teams a lot of times who are contending for a playoff spot or to make a run at a championship can literally pick up pitching on a bat in the middle of the season all the time. There's always somebody willing to trade with you in baseball. It's crazy.
Yeah. It's good motivation. It's good motivation, I was going to say, because it's like a guy can, instead of, not that you should dog it anyway, but he could be hitting the lights out or pitching the lights out, and then the team is, just sucks and or is not performing well at all. And then all of a sudden, he says, oh, man, I can play myself into the playoffs, you know, if our team keeps doing bad, but I maintain my level of play.
Yeah. See, Pittsburgh is in a situation that they're not used to being in. You know what I'm saying? They're usually the sellers. But they actually are buyers in this situation because, you know, for most of the season, they've had the lead in their division. So Pittsburgh is thinking World Series right now. So Marlon Byrd is kind of a rental type player for them right now, just to fill that little gap that they have. They did have to give up. They gave up a prospect in Keith Law to get him. You know, will that ever show in the future? You know, who knows? You know, maybe
I'm
you
laughing.
Don't count prospects like that because, you know, they were never a part of the team, so maybe you just don't include them in the whole process of it.
We got a tweet at KCMAC38 that somebody checked Marlon's urine. He's a Victor Conti man. So you know.
Yeah. So I don't know if they had this in the works already, but you know, the day it happened, they began the day like a half game behind St. Louis, but they didn't play that night. St. Louis won. Took a half-game lead and sole possession of the NL Central, and then Pittsburgh went right to work getting some help. They actually claimed Marlon Byrd off of waivers, but they had to give some compensation for him. So we'll see if it helps to put them back over the hump. Like, I don't, the Phillies, they stink. They're out of it. I wouldn't mind seeing a team like Pittsburgh who's been trash truck juice for the past few decades. actually rise up and do something. So, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing the Pirates win the World Series, man. It'd be a good story.
Yeah, it'd be good. Yeah, it would definitely would. I mean, because, like, you talk about, you know, just bad teams. And, you know, in my time of watching baseball, like, you know,
right.
You remember Bonilla and Bonds, okay?
Mm-hmm.
After that, between then and now, oh, my God.
See,
some of the worst baseball.
That's the thing. Just like I was saying earlier, like, they're usually the ones selling. They're usually in the Mets position where they're like, okay, the season stinks. We have nothing else left to play for. You know, we have this guy on the team that's good. Pittsburgh usually can't afford the guys that they have, so they used to just off people for prospects. And now it's the other way around. They're going all out, trying to get one.
Yeah.
We'll see how it works out for them. In other baseball news, Yasiel Puig from Dodgers, you know, who's been the biggest thing in baseball the last few months, we've heard rumors about his actions off the field. I mean, even his actions on the field, they can't get him to play defense the way they want him to. He misses. He doesn't miss. He just tries to throw past the cutoff man all the time because he feels, you know, he has the arm to do it. But he was pulled from a game the other day in the fifth inning, and they were just citing disciplinary reasons. Of course, Don Mattingly, he just said, you know, I thought Skip Schumacher gave us a better chance to win in this particular situation. But Yasiel Puig, after the game, acknowledged that it had something to do with defense, but it's being reported as a disciplinary action. So what do you guys think of that? I mean, the guy is so talented, but you always hear about what he's doing off the field and even, you know, them not being able to get him to do things they want him to do on the field.
Yeah, I mean, from what we see, the guy's like a complete diva. But he's very, very talented. And this goes back to, like, baseball and their unwritten rules. Like, you can't be lollygagging or not giving your all when playing baseball. It's like one of those things. They just don't, you know, they don't go for that. And, you know, that's the only thing I could say it had to be. But, you know, every story you hear about this guy, it just makes him sound like a complete diva. But when you watch him play, he's so talented, man. And I don't know where it's going to go, like what's going to happen to him long term. I mean, because there are a lot of players that this kind of happened to before. I remember the same thing was said about, like, Andrew Jones, and he was pulled in the middle of an inning a couple of times by Bobby Cox, but he got his act together and, you know, had a great career. So, you know, let's see what happens after the fact, how he bounces back from this long term. But Sky, like, you're too talented to act like this, man.
Yeah,
I think he's too raw. When you say, like, raw talent, like, you see it. You see his talent and his motivation is infectious amongst the rest of the team. Where, I mean, he's just running out every play and he's really excited. So but his fundamentals, you know, he needs to improve upon his fundamentals. It's almost like the guy you see at the gym who, you know, he's really fast. He can dunk. He can jump. He can score a lot of points, rebound, play D, but he doesn't have a left hand. He doesn't really have a jump shot.
Blow the game for you, dribbling the ball off his foot or something. After he did so much spectacular stuff.
Oh, like Blake Griffin? I'm sorry, go ahead.
I don't know why Blake think he got handled like that now. But all right, so anyway, speaking of basketball players, Tracy McGrady has officially called it quits. He's retiring from the NBA. He kind of left the door open for China since he... in his own words, says he has, such a big brand over there that, you know, he's leaving the door open there. In his 16 years of playing ball, McGrady averaged 19.6 points, 5.6 rebounds, 4.4 assists per game. You know, he was one of the guys drafted right out of high school. I always thought McGrady was definitely, you know, during his prime, one of the more talented players in the league. And for a moment there, he had seemed to have the kind of confidence needed to be one of the top players in the league. And then, you know, the injury started to kick in. And a lot of people think Tracy McGrady never really lived up to everything he could be. What do you guys think?
I'm one of those people, and I've never really been a huge T-Mac fan because, excuse me, I've seen several instances where he'd be having a great game or something, his team gets down, looks like the game is out, and he'll, like, start faking back spasms. somehow the team rallies without him, and once the game gets close, the spasms out of the blue go away. Like, you know, I thought that he dogged it a lot. He was Yasiel Puig-ing a majority of his career. So, for me, I've never been a fan of that because this he came around the same time as, like, a Bubba Chuck or a Kobe, guys that, you know, give it their all to no end, and you see this guy just basically quitting on his team on several occasions, you know? And
I really sick this week. What was the problem?
I broke my back.
What do you mean by that? You broke
my back is broken.
What, a vertebrae or what portion?
Spinal.
Both are spinal. I was always sort of a T-Mac fan. You know, I just liked to see the dude get down when he was in get-down mode. You know, it was a great sight to see when he was on fire. And, you know, for a few years there, he stayed on fire. He was one of those guys, though. You know, we know how the Kobe Bryant era has gone where, you know, no matter what he was doing, Kobe just really couldn't get the support of the people, like, nationally. So, like, every guy who came along at the two-guard position or the small forward position, people were screaming they were better than Kobe. Maybe, and they most likely weren't, but people wanted the next guy to be better than Kobe so bad that they always jumped the gun on him. I mean, at one point, Vince Carter was better than Kobe. Allen Iverson was better than Kobe. Tracy McGrady was better than Kobe. But he's kind of outlasted all of those guys and played at a higher level.
Stackhouse was better than Kobe.
So, I don't know. I'm not even going to try to think about it right now because Jimmy reminded me that we already did a HOF or FOH on Tracy. I don't think I was here for that.
We could do another one, though. We could do a quick, one. It's just us.
No, because I don't even know.
I say no. Simple as that. I say no. But anyway.
We can do a quick one. No,
go ahead.
He was another dude, like, he had a crazy toolbox. But, I don't think he was one of those guys who didn't open up the toolbox because you had seasons where Tracy McGrady averaged, man, he had a span in his career starting from his fourth year where he averaged 26.8, 25.6, 32.1, 28, 25.7, 24.4, 24.6, 21.6, you know, and that's when it started to go down from there, and he probably hung around a little too long playing on teams where he really didn't matter much. But I think I hold Tracy McGrady in a higher regard than Jimmy does. But, I think in his prime, he was better than Vince Carter. I think he was much better.
I was just getting ready to ask you that. I'm already getting hit on Twitter saying that he's a Hall of Famer, but I say no because y'all know my criteria. When I tell the history of the game, does T-Mac have to be mentioned? Hell no. For what reason? But anyway,
I think it would be hard to talk about that era and not talk about T-Mac, though, man.
You're not going to talk about
the first round of the playoffs, but – that's
my point. My point is, like, most of the time when you talk about errors, you talk about, like, great playoff series and great performances. I can't think of, like, I can't think of.
He just didn't win.
No, I'm just saying, I can't think of that, like, that one performance that will stand out. I'm talking about a one performance that will stand out. Like, if I'm talking about that error, most of the time it's about an amazing playoff series that an athlete had or that one defining performance. I can't think of anything that would make me bring up T-Mac's name.
Yeah.
I mean,
I feel you.
He scored a bunch of points. I mean, yeah, he scored a bunch of points.
Because, like, the whole Orlando thing, like, I don't look at them not advancing on him. I mean, I think he was carrying a bad team at that point. So, you know, for the first, as a matter of fact, for his first 5 years in the playoffs, he averaged over 30 points a game, but then you have to factor in the fact that he only played, like, 4 to 7 games, you know, in that whole span. So he never played more than one series. So, I mean, he got it and did his thing in those series, but He just couldn't make a big enough difference to get his teams out of
I got two comments on Twitter, Dev. Two comments. One from KC Max says, dunking on Shaw and Bradley was his moment. And I do remember that dunk. But that's what I said. I can remember the dunk, but nothing else.
Well,
and also,
well,
like,
that's,
from
that's
our,
the moment,
like,
then everybody
points?
Got that moment. Everybody punched on
Yeah,
11 Bradley.
Points in 30 seconds. For a comeback at the end of the game against the Spurs.
Yeah, that was hot. That was
yeah. That was my next comment.
But as far
Glenn,
as Sean Bradley goes, like, come on, Eddie Jones punched
Sean
Bradley.
We got a comment from Glenn at Andre underscore 215.
Sean Bradley.
T Mac scoring 13 points in 35 seconds against the Spurs. Also, our upcoming college football expert, he weighs in on Twitter as well. He said T Mac is a guy from my area and all. But he isn't Hall of Fame worthy. He was like Mello before Mello.
He was T-Mac was a monster, man. I don't know. I would have to think about that.
Yo, anybody slandering T-Mac, I'm on your side.
I think T-Mac was obviously a great player, exceptional talent. Well, a very good player with great talent. So there were times where when things got tough or the pressure came to him, the situation, he would actually raise his game a little higher, and it's like, okay, well, why weren't you playing like that the whole time? And what I remember is it was a year where Kobe had, like, a bunch of 40-point games in a row, and but T-Mac was leading the league in scoring. So then during that time, whatever lead T-Mac had over Kobe, once he saw Kobe catch up to him, he just bumped it up a little more. And, you know, then when Kobe kind of calmed down, and then T-Mac kind of calmed down, I'm like, man, why don't you just dominate from the start?
Right.
God, he's a coward, man. Anyway, I'm sorry. I'm going to leave him alone, man. Our guest is waiting to come on anyway, man. But, you know, I got a couple more stories to get to. What you want to do, Dev? You want to do the college football preview first and then come back to these stories?
Yeah, because after we talk about T-Max, we're actually going to talk about Johnny Manziel anyway. So, actually, we can use the college preview to kind of segue back into
Okay,
Johnny
cool,
Manziel,
cool,
so.
Cool, cool, cool. Cool. And no doubt. So we can definitely, you know, bring our guests on. Hold on one second. Let me.
Yeah, but no, I don't know, Kill. I might, you know, my Jimmy's on that. I don't know. If we were to do it again and I was present, I might be a vote for T-Mac to go into the Hall of Fame. Like, I'm not sure, though. So y'all had to get back to me on that one.
All right, well,
for me it was close enough where I don't even remember.
Well, hold on. Before we do, let's just jump into this college football real quick. Make sure we get this in. The upcoming week the games have already started. And the guy we have on is a college football expert. He's the founder and co-owner of Heavy in the Games, and you can check him out at heavyinthegames.com. Podcaster, you know, great guy, fun-loving family man, and all the other good accolades you can say about someone. Fred, are you there?
What's going on, guys?
Fred,
how are you, Fred?
I'm good, man.
Listen,
I'm good.
Man,
college football is here.
How about
you told me earlier, man.
It is your time of the year, man.
Fred, didn't you tell me earlier you were taking UNC in this game?
I'm shaking my head at this right now. I'm actually watching the game right now, and from the beginning of the game, I said, this team can't stop the run. They can't stop the pass. And Jadeveon Clowney's in the backfield. So right now this game is 17-0 South Carolina, and I'm kind of changing my tune, but this is a long game. But
when the game first started, I was like, he told me North Carolina was the pick. I said South Carolina must have scored within the first 3 seconds of the game because I didn't even see him score. I just saw like a couple seconds go off the clock, and South Carolina was already up. I'm like, how did they score so fast?
This team in South Carolina, I just wasn't sure how this offense would look without a guy like Marcus Lattimore in the backfield. And also, you have a lot of guys missing on defense. You lose a linebacker in Shaq Wilson, who was the leader of that defense last year, and a couple other guys like Ace Sanders to the NFL and other things. But this team in South Carolina is coming out. And also, you have to know North Carolina on defense is starting a few freshmen and a couple walk-ons. Offensively, this team is stellar, but right now they just do not look like a team that is ready to handle what Jadeveon Clowney is giving them right now.
Yeah, and we've heard his name, but listen, before we even get into the actual players, because I think Jadeveon Clowney will be one of those players who can, you know, actually be up for the Heisman with his talent. But before we even get into that, let me ask you a question. This is the last year of the BCS system, so.
Mm-hmm.
Give us, in your opinion, the legitimate national championship contenders. If you can give me like a handful of teams who are to win a national championship, who would it be?
Well, we can just pencil Alabama in. You can change that pencil, erase the pencil out. Go ahead and put that in pen. Alabama has an offense and a defense under Nick Saban who they just keep winning. And you have A.J. McCarron. I think most people now, they know him more for his girlfriend. But at the end of the day, this guy, he's just really an efficient passer. I don't know if, as far as an NFL prospect yet, but I like him as a college player. 30 touchdowns to 3 interception ratio. Most efficient quarterback in college football last year. You have T.J. Yeldon coming back. A high school phenom in Derrick Henry will not play right now, but he reminds me a lot of Brandon Jacobs from the NFL. You have Amari Cooper coming in. Chris Black, a guy that most will not know his name yet, but he's a smaller guy, but a guy that can get down the field and a new dimension to that team. And that is the tight end position. They have a freshman by the name of O.J. Howard who will make a lot of differences. They can stretch the field. Another couple teams I can give you, the Oregon Ducks. Chip Kelly gone on to the NFL, but that offense is still there. Mark Helfrich, their offensive coordinator, will just throw the ball a little bit more. DeAnthony Thomas isn't going anywhere. He doesn't mind lighting teams up. You have the Stanford Cardinals out of the Pac-12 again, another Pac-12 team. This team is very physical. This is the only team in college football I actually think can match Alabama for size, speed, and physicality. Alabama's a physical team up front, and I saw in the Rose Bowl last season the physicality. David Shaw is going to have his name called for the NFL next year coming in. His offensive coordinator is already in the NFL with the Indianapolis Colts and Pepper Hamilton. I like this team. And
that's interesting. I got to look out for them, though. I got to look out. You said they could actually compete on the physical level with Alabama.
This
I got to definitely look out for them.
Akil and I went to school with Pep Hamilton at Howard University. Pep's a friend of ours. Yeah.
Quarterback. And the one team that I really like, and I'm not sure yet, but the Clemson Tigers. This team is always on that radar, but this year I think this team has offensively the most explosive offense in college football. You have Taj Boyd coming back for his senior season. You have Sammy Watkins coming back after a mediocre season by his standard, 700-plus yards. A guy in Martavius Bryant that many don't know yet, 6'5", 225, a Randy Moss type of player, can beat you deep down the field. You can't really cover him. Sharon Peake, a sophomore coming in, that he was the number one wide receiver a couple years ago coming out of high school. The running game isn't solid, but if they can get through Georgia, this team can light up scoreboards, and if they can hold teams down a little bit on the defensive side and let the defense catch up, this team can surprise in college football.
Wow. All right, so you gave us some teams to look out for, man. I know, Dev, you had a question about some players, right?
Yeah, no, I just wanted to ask you, Fred, you know, the same as with the teams. Give us 5 contenders for the Heisman, and who's your favorite to win it?
Well, I just released my 2013 watch list a few days ago, and I have A.J. McCarron as my number one to win the Heisman, mainly because of the fact he's the quarterback on the best team in the country. The Heisman is no longer an award for the best player in the country. It's the best player on the best team, and it's a media award. A.J. McCarron has done everything he can do. You really can't do much more. If Alabama's in position to win another national title, you can expect them to just go ahead and call his name. Johnny Manziel, still there. He, despite all the things that you've seen off the field, he can still play football. And
no doubt.
I really think regardless of him being out for a half against Rice, come on, guys, it's Rice. We're not
Rice
really worried. I have my other thoughts on that. But nonetheless, this team is going to be fine offensively. They really have a tough schedule down the stretch. But I think Johnny Manziel can recreate that magic. I think he has a chance. I look at a guy like a Taj Boyd who, again, has a very explosive offense. I think this can be one very explosive offense with the Clemson Tigers. Just the question is, can they get to an ACC title game? My dark horse for this, and Arizona is not a team that you would think can win a national title, but Kadeem Carey, running back out of Arizona under Rich Rodriguez. Every year, Rich Rodriguez always has a guy, whether it's a quarterback in Pat White, a running back in Steve Slayton, a guy like a Noel Devine, someone in that spread offense that makes plays. Kadeem Carey almost had 2,000 yards last year. This guy is a baller, and you will know his name by the end of the year. He is my dark horse for the Heisman. He probably won't win it, but don't be surprised if he's waiting in the wings. And last but not least, Lachey Sestrunk out of Baylor. He predicted he'll win the Heisman already. He was a former transfer from Oregon. From the days of LaMichael James and DeAnthony Thomas, he is a speedster in a big back's body. This guy can really play, and he finished a long 80-yard run last year and pulled his hamstring and still finished the run. This guy's explosive.
Let me ask you a question. What do you think about Jadeveon Clowney? Because he's one of the more popular players, especially after that hit from last year, but and people are talking about his ability to play at the next level. Do you think he'll be one of those guys that won't win, but they'll invite just because he's that great of a college football player?
I wouldn't put it past him that he could possibly be the first defensive player since Charles Woodson to actually win it. This guy is explosive. I've asked myself, when will they put in a package for him on offense to run what we can call the wild clown? Because this guy can play. The clip, they showed a couple clips early on of him running track. This guy is he's 6'6". He can run a 4.46 40. This guy can. He's explosive and he's powerful. He's 270 pounds. Who's going to tackle him? But to truly answer your question, I really think this guy is the best player in the country, bar none.
Yeah.
He's a freak, and no defense can really stop him. The question is the only person that can stop him is him.
Yeah, because I've read from a lot of experts who say that there's no way he's not the number one pick, like barring injury. Like, he's just that good. Like, he's the guy that everybody's going to want to have at the next level. So just wanted to get your thoughts
not
on
so
him.
Not so fast,
but,
my friend. Not so fast.
What I've read. Listen, you're the expert. You tell me. I'm just telling you what I've read. But what do you think?
Not so fast, my friend. He may not be the number one pick. There's a guy at Louisville, and I'm sticking to this. Teddy Bridgewater, quarterback, a guy that, and I am a Miami Hurricanes fan, and it tears me up inside because he was a Miami Hurricane commit until the last minute. He was Ja'Cory Harris's backup in high school, and this guy he really has a chance to unseat Jadeveon Clowney if and only if a team like, let's say, the Jets or another bad team gets the number
someone
one
who needs a quarterback.
Needs the quarterback.
Yeah. Okay. But outside of that, you think Jadeveon's going to be
outside
number one?
Outside of that, no one else can unseat Jadeveon Clowney.
All right. Well, good. I'm glad you put him on our radar as well. So we'll look out for that. Listen, you gave us some good information, man. Let our people know, let our fans know how they can, read more about what you do and to get all of your work. Because you said you put out a list of, people to watch. Where can they find your work at?
You can find my work at heavyinthegames.com. You can also, I'm very active on Twitter. You can hit me up on Twitter at FProduceSports. I'm actually live tweeting the games. Looking forward to a great season. This college football is here. The NFL will be here soon. And I just like interacting with the fans and talking football.
Absolutely. And we definitely want to, get you on during the course of this year, hopefully on a weekly basis to, tell us what games to look out for in college football. And, we know you're a Patriots fan too, so if I can, slander your team anyway, we could bring you on to talk some professional football too.
Well, the Patriots, that team, I'm just going to throw it out there. We're going to win the division again.
I mean, that ain't hard to do, but.
Yes, it's not hard to do. I remember you're a Broncos fan yourself, so you'll win your division easily. So I'll see you in the playoffs. And
absolutely.
Go at it again.
That ain't hard to be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, friend. Well, thanks for calling in. Enjoy the game tonight, and we look forward to hearing more from you in the course of this college football season, man.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, take it easy.
Thanks.
All right, that's Fred Perdue, everybody, from heavyinthegames.com. Make sure to check out his work. He's a college football expert. As you can hear, this guy has a vast amount of knowledge on college football.
Yeah,
you know,
a wealth of knowledge, boy. All right, so let's get back into these hot topics a little bit. Because I wanted to ask you guys about Floyd Mayweather Sr. You know, usually it's Floyd Mayweather Jr. running his mouth these days because, you know, he's the one that's on top and doing his thing. But Floyd Mayweather Sr. kind of took some shots at Adrian Broner. And the story goes, you know how Floyd basically says that he's Adrian Broner's big brother and, you know, Adrian Broner says the same thing. But Floyd recently asked Broner to go on a press tour with him for his fight against Canelo Alvarez on September 14th, and Broner declined. Like, we're not really sure why he declined. You know, it was brought up that, you know, Floyd Mayweather Jr. once turned down advice from Sugar Ray Leonard. Sound like a Donovan McNabb, RG3 type thing as well. But they say they maintain that they would never fight. But I have some quotes from Floyd Mayweather Sr. who isn't so sure about that. Now bear with me because I am reading quotes from Sr. And y'all know how his dialect goes. But he said, there can always be something there that makes you fight. You say you ain't going to do this, you ain't going to do that. Let something go wrong. Let Broner say something wrong that Floyd don't like. And then he went on to say, another one is going to happen to, as soon as he gets the right man in his face, is Broner. Broner, so far, so good. He's doing it the best of anyone else that's did it. And he's talking about imitating Floyd. But then, also, he's had stiffs in front of him. He hasn't had no real fighter in front of him. When he gets somebody real in front of him, he's going to forget all about the role. The role won't even be there. Believe me, the role won't be there. None of that other stuff, picking off, catching, rolling, you won't see none of that. So he's basically saying out of all of the people who's imitated Floyd, Broner right now is doing it the best, but when he gets a real fighter in front of his face, all that stuff that he takes from Floyd is probably going to go out of the window because he's going to find himself in a brawl. And, you know, do you guys think there's any validity to that, you know, especially after seeing his very unimpressive performance against Paulie Malignaggi.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's funny because you were at the fight, at the Malignaggi fight, mm-hmm. and I'm not going to lie. My opinion of him before the fight and after the fight was a little different because I didn't see it. I mean, listen, I watched him fight for, you know, a couple of years at this point. I've seen him dominate. But, you know, Floyd Sr., first off, people don't realize because they recognize him because he's Floyd's pop, but he's also one of the best trainers in the world. I mean, this guy knows boxing. This is a boxing family. He's no slouch himself. In fact, after watching that All Access, Floyd Sr. looked like he's in shape. I think he can knock a couple people out himself. But so he knows what he's talking about, and not that I agree with him per se, because you know I would need to see more. I would actually need to see more of a Broner for me to make that decision. But I don't know whether they're setting up for a fight because a lot of this sounds like wow. Because the way he was sweating Floyd before, now just turn him down like that is kind of crazy.
I mean, it might be a thing where he's trying to separate himself from the lackey role. He is getting big in the sport, so you know you might not want to roll around on tour as somebody's lackey. So if that's the case, I could kind of understand it. They didn't really leave a reason for why he turned it down, but Floyd Sr. seems to have taken a little bit of exception to it. Like you said, Jimmy, being at that fight, like my opinion of him changed a little bit as well, and you know I don't know if it's 100% true, you know, what Floyd Sr. is saying, but I did look at it to the point where, like, when he gets somebody real in front of him, he might have some trouble. I don't think he had trouble doing whatever he wanted to do against Paulie. I just think he wanted to showboat so much, and the fact that Paulie, you know, punches like cotton. You know, he wants you to go in there and show both, let him hit you a little bit just to show people that his punches aren't hurting you. But, you know, as much as you rave before the fight and talked all that trash, he should have destroyed this dude and sent a message to anybody
out
there.
You know what, though?
The message that he sent is that he could be a little bit vulnerable when somebody
You made the best point then, which is, I mean, it's one thing to want to be Floyd, but the one thing no one can ever take away from Floyd, whether you love him, whether you hate him, is the guy's work ethic and the amount of work that he puts in. He can be a clown, and we all know that's for marketing purposes, but when it's time to, like, you know, put the work in, Floyd puts the work in.
Time for the hard work and dedication.
And Floyd, Floyd makes it look easy. Floyd can joke around in the ring because he's naturally gifted. He's that good. So a lot of guys who try to imitate Floyd, try to, like, imitate those things about Floyd, but they just don't have a natural talent. Now, natural talent doesn't always, you know, make you the best if you can work hard. But
or the work ethic.
I don't.
Or the work ethic.
Exactly. Now, you know, not that I'm saying that Connor doesn't have the same work ethic. I mean, we really don't know. But at the end of the day, like, Floyd makes his opponents look terrible. Floyd's not a big knockout artist, but when you watch his fights, like, yo, it's not even competitive at most points. And that's because he's really that good. I felt like Groner was trying to imitate Floyd, but he's just not as good as Floyd naturally, if that makes any sense. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, at the end of the day, whether they're setting up for a fight, though, I don't know. People will fight for, you know, pay to watch that fight. Floyd does have the four fights remaining. And just looking around, the only fights I see, you know, were probably like Amir Khan, Danny Garcia, you know, Devon Alexander, and Lucas Matisse. Like, other than that,
I would love to see that fight, man. Because remember, after the Paulie fight, he was in the ring, and people really didn't, you know, he wasn't getting the reaction from the crowd that he wanted. So he was like, yeah, you know, my next fight, I'll let y'all pick my opponent. You know, everybody started screaming Floyd. You know, he didn't really say much after that. I would love to see him fight kind of a student-teacher type thing, but it would have to happen pretty quickly, you know what I'm saying, because Floyd is still the best in the game, but at the same time, what do we always say? Like, nobody beats Father Time. So
yeah, Father Time got a better record than Floyd.
Father Time, Mother Nature, they undefeated. Like, that couple is undefeated.
Father Time got a better record than Floyd. Floyd 44-0. Yeah. Father Time record is a lot better than that.
Yeah, so it's one of those things. Because people will throw names out there and, well, such and such did it at this age. Yeah, he did it. That means he got with Father Time for a little while. But at the end, you can't do – there's nothing you can do on a physical nature forever. I mean, you can't even live forever. So there's nothing you can do forever. So Father Time ain't the one to play with.
You think Floyd is starting to venture into the area that Roy Jones ventured into, where really there was nobody for him to fight at all?
No, I mean, there's still some fighters.
Yeah, it's still some people.
Danny Garcia would be a huge fight.
But the thing is, I'd rather see Danny Garcia fight Broner. Maybe.
Yeah.
Shut him up a little bit, but there's still some fights out there.
See, Roy Jones had problems because of his weight class. And first off, Roy Jones never fought nobody. So, I mean, you know, that's his whole career.
He ran into trying to move up.
Come on, man.
He was bored at his weight, so he wound up going from like a middleweight to like a heavyweight.
Kill. He never fought nobody. If you look at Roy Jones' career and look at his wins, yo, he was fighting. He literally, and this is not even exaggerating or making a joke. He fought two civil servants. Like, he really did.
That.
He fought two guys that had fake jobs.
He fought a UPS
driver. He fought like a trash man. He fought a trash man after he played in a USBL basketball game.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, he never really fought anybody. I mean, Virgil Hill, I mean.
He beat Bernard Hopkins. He beat.
First off, that was questionable. And then he ducked Bernard for a long time until he was old and lost again.
Then, let's see. Montel Griffin, Virgil Hill.
Montel Griffin's not good, though. Kill, these guys aren't nobody.
But that's what
I'm
saying.
Roy Jones is the most, or one of the most overrated athletes in the history of life.
Yo, he would have got more wrecked from Montel Jordan than Montel Griffin.
He ducked Bernard.
After that Bernard fight, which was questionable to begin with, I don't think he. Yo, he ducked Bernard for 11 years. Because first off, he lost the fight to Bernard, but Nike made sure he won. And then the second time, Bernard gave him a boxing lesson. And then next thing I know, Roy Jones is fighting up Shelton Hamm Mall. Like, Roy Jones is a disgrace. Yo, Roy Jones' record now, he might have just as many losses as wins at this point because he still fights.
he still fights like every week.
He fought last year.
I just wanted to let y'all know, shout out to the homie Naeem. album out in Maryland. He said Off the Wall was Mike's best album. So I got somebody
okay.
who wants that.
Okay.
But yeah, man. So before we get into some NFL, man, we got to talk about this. His name came up in the whole college football talk with Fred and Johnny Manziel. He had a six-hour meeting with the NCAA on Sunday. They came to the conclusion that, you know, they basically acknowledged that they couldn't find any evidence of money actually changing hands for these autograph sessions.
Well,
so,
we don't believe you. You need more people.
They gave him a suspension just because they're saying, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. We couldn't really find the fire, so we're going to slap you on your wrist because of the smoke. They suspended this man for the first half of the game against Rice University. Like Fred said, like, so what? That's Rice. They'll probably be up 30 before he gets into the game. But what did you guys think about the suspension?
Yo, if I was his team, I would just...
I'm like, either don't
every
suspend
time
him
got
at
it.
All or suspend him for a game, but a half a game?
Yeah, I think there's... I mean, he signed thousands of autographs. Like, I don't... Maybe he's just a nice guy like that, so forgive me if I'm prejudging him. But he signed thousands and thousands, and he's on tape. And, you know, they're insinuating exchange of money on the tape, but you don't see any money being exchanged on the tape. And then his signatures, they hit the internet right away. So, like they said, where there's smoke, there's fire. But like we alluded to before in previous shows, the NCAA, they're looking out for their investment. So Johnny Manziel needs to be on the field versus Alabama. So
listen, man, many people already hit me up. Like, I know you're going to say something about race, and they think I talk about race all the time. I'm not even going to get into the race situation because I don't necessarily think that this situation was so much about race. If his name was Jabbar Manziel, maybe he would have been treated different. But to me, like when you look at the punishment, now you could talk about the way he was treated in the media, which I have in the past. But this punishment is a joke because either you found something or you didn't. You give him a half against Rice. If I was his team, I would literally punt the ball every time we got it until he got in the game just to make a point because. I think that the NCAA is a joke. They need to just, like, cut it out, man. This is a joke. I mean, at the end of the day, it all comes down to money. You want the money. You want this guy to play because here's what. If you actually suspend this guy for a nice amount of time, that can affect your bottom line. They have some very big national games that they play. And without Johnny Manziel on the field, no one really cares. Because at the end of the day, all this did was make him more popular, and more people want to see him now.
And
you know?
It's not like, Jimmy, it's not like he's just a Heisman candidate. He won it already. So, you know, they already know, you know, what kind of windfall financially they're in for with him this season. So, yeah, I agree that all of that probably played a part in their investigation. But at the same time, like, what could they have done if they really didn't find, you know, a paper trail of the money. Like, what could they have done? Could they have just judged it off what everybody thinks? Because I don't know, because we talked about it when you said you thought things was covered different, but I actually thought, you know, I got tired of hearing about Johnny Manziel, and I haven't heard anybody, you know, report it and say that they thought he didn't do it. Like, I don't believe
it.
I don't think there's anybody that nice to sit there and make their hand ache and sign all those autographs for nothing. I don't care how rich you are.
That wasn't my thing. Like, not that it wasn't being covered. It was the way it was covered. Because Johnny Manziel was made to be a guy that was, like, thumbing his face against authority as opposed to being, like, you know, sort of like a juvenile delinquent like Reggie Bush or some of those other guys were portrayed. They were portrayed to be bad guys when, in fact, they were just young guys who were trying to get money and play football. No different. But Johnny Manziel was kind of, like, portrayed as a guy thumbing himself, you know, given the authority to finger, which in a sense he did do, and I do like the fact that he did that because
season.
The NCAA is a joke. It's
because Brian got suspended for a season for having dinner with Deion and lying about it, and they took his whole senior year.
No, it was just a lie. It wasn't even a legal dinner, though. It was like, yo, he just lied about it. And my thing is, if you didn't find anything, what were you doing for six hours? Yo, they met with him. His meeting with the NCAA was longer than the OJ trial. So
what were they trying to do?
Doing?
Like, trying to break him into confessing or something? Like, I would have been like, yo, why am I still here? After, like, the first 45 minutes, like, yo, why am I still here? Seriously.
He probably was in there signing autographs.
For money. They probably paid him. Like, yeah, I'll give you a couple hours for that autograph.
He is thumbing his finger at authority in the sense. He is doing that. We see him, like, with the pictures with the money in his hand. And I want to know, what does his parents do for a living? Everybody always talks about how he comes from money. But I never heard exactly what his parents do. Like, what the hell is he, a Rothschild or something? Like, but anyway.
You know, it's one of those things. First of all, one person hear it, then they spread it, you know. And we really, that's a great point, because we really don't know what they do. But it's just, quote, unquote, common knowledge now that he comes from money. I don't know. Maybe they're like.
Yeah, it's one of those things.
White. His mom, like the white lady heroine or something. I don't know. But I think a half suspension, that's like some high school basketball. I think me and PJ got suspended for a half for cutting class in high school one time on the basketball
team. Y'all did.
Like, how do you suspend somebody for a half a game? Either you're not going to do anything because you indeed didn't find anything, or even if it's going to be a slap on the wrist, suspend him for the whole game. This is one of those things, you know, in college football, if you are a Heisman candidate, one bad game or one missed game can throw your whole candidacy off. So that's probably, they're probably figuring, all right, let's suspend him for a half. He can still come in and do enough in that second half to where he'll still be a part of the Heisman mix, and we can get this money off of him. And I just think it was real slimy, real shady to give him anything if supposedly they didn't find anything. Like, I don't understand the NCAA in anything that they do, man.
J.C. Max says that his family is actually in the oil business, so they might have some long bread.
You want to hear the story? This is the story. Bobby Joe Manziel was a bantamweight boxer born in Lebanon who sparred and became friends with heavyweight champion Jack Dempsey. And after he retired, he bought some land from Dempsey for $400 in the 1930s to drill for oil on the grounds of the Negro New Hope Baptist Church in Gladwater, Texas. And then the well is just, I mean, there was a lot of oil coming out, and it was the best investment they ever made. So that took them into millions and millions of dollars. And they settled in Tyler, Texas. Yep, $400 back in 1930.
Jimmy, when was the last time you spent $400 and it changed your life?
Yo.
You know what happened? I spent more than that on Facebook stock, and I ain't even got that yet right now. That's crazy.
I'll spend more on that. No, ma.
It's like dude bought South Fork or something. Like, it's all good. All right, so
yeah,
man.
So.
As usual, we talk about a NCAA story, and we basically leave the conversation more confused than we were when we started, because they're very hard to understand over there in NCAA land. So the way they think is crazy, man. So we'll just go ahead and move on. I'm just kind of dumbfounded. A half a game. This boy got a 30-minute punishment. They put him in timeout for 30 minutes. If you don't know, that's the name of this episode, 30-minute timeout. That was all about
that's all it is.
Manziel.
That's all it is. That's
all right,
crazy,
everybody. Y'all can, like we told you earlier, you can check out our website at warroomsports.com to call in and speak with us about any of today's topics. Dial the Digital Extreme Tech Hotline at 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk. Let's move on. Let's talk some NFL football.
No doubt. The NFL Wrap is brought to you by Stitcher Smart Radio. You can now hear our show with the War Room on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your computer, iPhone, Android phone, also BlackBerry or Palm phone. But if you have one of those phones, kill yourself. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed and no memory or storage wasted. Go to Stitcher.com/TheWarRoom. That's one word. And also, use the coupon code TheWarRoom to enter into a contest to win some money. And who doesn't like money? Anyway, here's the first story, gentlemen. The NFL settles a concussion lawsuit.
My bad. Jim, I just want to tell somebody, my bad. Somebody was on the line for a minute holding 301 number. My bad we didn't get to you. If you want to call back in, we'll get to you during this NFL segment.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Just call us back. But anyway, NFL settles a concussion lawsuit with over 4,500 ex-players for about $765 million. What do you guys think about the NFL getting rid of this lawsuit that's hanging? 700 and $65 million.
Damn!
Chump about time for the NFL. Came to an end. Yeah, Chump it's
change.
About time that something, I mean, this can all come to an end with all the research and all the retired players and, you know, at least their families can get some type of monetary compensation. But there's so many players in the suit, and it's even eligible to the 18,000 former NFL players that it might be like, you know, like $1,000. Go ahead.
I think the players took an L. I think the players took a big L in this situation. Now, if you just go off the raw numbers, like you said, it's over 4,500 people in the suit already. And like you said, it is eligible to, you know, other people. 4,500 players, $765 million. That sounds like a whole lot of money, which, you know, it's not just a bump in the road for the NFL, even though they're worth, you know, so much more. And they're a billion-dollar-a-year business, much more than that. But 765, you divide that by 4,500, that's like $170,000 per person. But that's just the raw numbers. Like, there's more details that went into this. And let me read you guys some of that. Because I don't think everybody is going to get the same amount anyway, because they said individual awards will be capped at $5 million for players suffering from Alzheimer's. Individual awards will be capped at $4 million for deaths from chronic traumatic, and, you know, Kill told us about CTE before, I can't pronounce that word. Individual awards will be capped at $3 million for players suffering from dementia. Said the money will go toward medical exams and concussion-related compensation for NFL retirees and their families, and $10 million toward medical research. So basically, you're taking another $10 million off right there. So the payout is down to $755 million. But one of the principal terms of the settlement is that the agreement can't be considered admission of liability by the NFL. So they're saying just because we're settling, that doesn't mean that we're admitting to you that we're guilty of what, you know, you guys are charging us of being guilty for. So they're saying $675 million of the $765 million will be used to compensate the former players and of the families of deceased players who suffered cognitive injuries, including families of players who committed suicide after suffering from CTE. The other money will be used for baseline medical exams, the cost of which will be capped at $75 million. And then the NFL will also fund research and education at a cost of $10 million. So like I said, we went through the raw numbers saying $170,000 per person, but we're already down to $675 million being the payout, $10 million, another $10 going to research. So I think the players took a big L in this whole thing. And it's like the more people who joined the suit, it kind of messed it up for everybody.
It's crazy. They got mollywopped. And I don't know if you heard this, but Casey Mack says that they also will not be responsible for any additional players. They're making them sign a waiver now.
So Kevin Cobb can't get in on this? Because he's done.
Kevin Cobb can't even get in on this, man. Yo, this is crazy. It's kind of ridiculous. But at the end of the day, I mean, I don't know what could have been the outcome of this, because they would have fought this forever. I mean, and the NFL has deep pockets. Their estimated revenue, look at this. This is a number right here I just read today. The NFL's estimated revenue by 2025 is $27
billion.
Hold up. That's revenue. Like, yo, that's just that's not their worth. That's not their valuation. That's their revenue. $27 billion.
I saw that figure, Jimmy, because Kevin Mawai, former player Kevin Mawai, tweeted it. He said in his tweet, NFL concussion lawsuit net outcome, big loss for the players now and in the future. And then he said what you said, estimated NFL revenue by 2025 equals $27 billion. I think the players got, man.
Yo, I want people to understand this real quick. People listen to this now.
Before he threw them over the bridge, they got thrown over the bridge.
Yo. Yeah. Yo, Gutter got to them. You know my Gutter, he kidnapped kids when they had thrown. Yo, here's my thing, though, right? Yo, that's not valuation. That is revenue. That's crazy. Now, at the end of the day, the NFL, I don't know, like, long-term what will happen to this game, because there are people now, right, who are pushing their kids away from playing football. So long-term football that we know and love could be in trouble, but that's years down the line. There's enough people in the pipeline now to keep it good.
We got our co-host B. Austin on the line. What are your thoughts about the whole settlement with the NFL and the whole concussion thing?
I mean, I feel the same way you do, fellas. This is closer to – this is like getting beat up and having to pay for it. Having to – you get beat up, and then you pay the person that beat you up. Or this is like, you know, maybe a little bit too soon and a little too early. This is like you walk down a dark street, somebody chases you, and then you take the L and get shot.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering why the players caved and settled, though. Like, was the argument too strong on the other side? Because, you know, there's a contingency that says, well, do you guys know what you signed up for? You know, it's hard to keep players off the field and that. Like, was that argument that strong that they had to take, you know, this figure?
That wasn't it. It was exactly what Jimmy alluded to. When someone's bread is so long that they can tie you up forever, it's not that this lawsuit wasn't worth literally probably 20 times the award. It's how long they would have had to fight to get that award. They would have been in court for 30 years to get what it was truly worth. So
half the plaintiffs in the case would have been deceased by the time, you know, they saw this whole thing through.
If you use a 4x multiplier on that $27 billion number, that's $100 billion in over $100 billion in valuation, and usually people use about a 10x multiplier. So what you're essentially saying is that the NFL in 2025 will be worth about $270 billion.
And all they gave
the players was $700 million. That's nuts.
Yeah, it definitely is, man. The media stories
generated more than $700 million.
Yo, B. Austin, I read a story this week, right? And this was like, it was tragic, right? It was a story about a chick that got raped, right? So dude, like, pleaded guilty, went to jail, came home. When he raped her, he knocked her up. Yo, and sued her for visitation, and won. Because technically he's the child's father. Yo, so that's what this reminds me of. Yo, you got screwed, and that they're screwing you more. Like, it's very sad because we know how players suffer after they retire or leave the NFL. When you see some of these stories, man, it's just sad. You got guys that can't move, guys that can't talk, guys that can't walk, guys whose legs are falling off, and they did it all, you know, for the glory of the game. And it is what some people say, well, they signed up for that. But back then, they didn't know. Now, but see, the thing is, now you know. If you sign up to play football now, you have something to point to. You know what I'm saying? Now you can say, okay,
that was
I see what happened.
They got robbed.
When you look at the long-term prospects for football, and I know people, I think I'm crazy, I think football will suffer maybe 25, 30 years from now. I don't think it'll be as prevalent as, say, you know, basketball or baseball is because of the situation. There are a lot of great athletes who won't even play football no more.
So you're saying, like, these revenue projections and these valuation projections are just, like, the peachy projections because of how it's going now. So everybody's still...
It's how it's going now, but it could change.
Everybody's still looking at it on this same curve without thinking that, you know, something might get thrown in the mix. Which probably already had. Like, that's why they're changing rules every other day now. So
I always ask you,
gentlemen,
both of you gentlemen have sons, right? If your son was great at both basketball and football, which one would you push him towards if he was good at both?
I just wanted to say, gentlemen, because I got to get out of here in honor of Johnny Manziel, I got suspended for a half. I was getting a blopper and got caught. All right, Joe.
Whoa!
All right, man. Be awesome, everybody.
Yeah, but go out
with a bang.
Yeah, I know that's right. Now, Dev, if little Chase was great at both basketball and football, where would you push him towards?
baseball. So no, yeah, I would definitely push him. You know, if I had any say in it, of course, you know, everybody's going to give you that fatherly, that parently answer. You know, I'm going to let him follow his dream and do what he wants. But if I had to nudge, yeah, I'd definitely nudge him toward the less dangerous sport, and that would be basketball.
But you're not alone.
And on a,
and on a
professional level, it's less dangerous and more lucrative. So, yeah, of course, I'm going to push him that way because I want that new house. And that.
And you're not alone. I remember watching one time, I was watching a documentary on boxing, and they were saying, like, what happened to the heavyweight division? And one of the guys in the documentary said,
people beat the brains out of the heavyweight division.
Well, he said that it was sort of like, you know, a narrative told about boxing where, you know, when you finish boxing, you can't speak, you can't talk. He said, so starting like in the late 80s and 90s, parents didn't let their kids box. They pushed them towards other sports. So guys, you know, who are, you know, very tall, very athletic guys like a J.J. Watt, are playing football now. You know, they're playing other sports. And I see the same thing happening to football where it may be around, but the greatest athletes won't be playing the game. They'll be doing other things. And, you know, I just think that's a long-term thing. As of right now, the game is very profitable. It's America's game, but I still think the players got jobbed in this whole situation. You know.
No doubt.
Man, it is what it is, though. It is what it is, good brother. Anyway, speaking of this situation, Kevin Corn on the Cob suffers another concussion, and they're saying his career may be done. So I don't know if he's saying that just so he can get in on this before, because I don't know whether he signed a waiver or not, but Kevin Cobb, who we once thought just had a chance to be a good quarterback.
You know what, man? The funny thing is, the night, the evening that it happened, I believe it was Saturday evening when he's playing against the Redskins, I was talking to somebody. I believe I was talking to, you know, Lamont. Shout out to Lamont. And when it happened, I was like, yo, Kevin Cobb got another concussion. And I was like half jokingly but half seriously saying, I'm like, yo, dude should probably think about, he should just hang it up. You know what I'm saying? So I really didn't expect to hear the next day that the Buffalo Bills were proceeding as if this concussion could be a career ender for him. See, what a lot of people don't understand, like, it's not about the number of concussions you get. And when you find those players like a Troy Aikman who's had, like, double-figure concussions, like, that's just so dangerous. Like, I've had two concussions in my life, and I think it affects me, you know, to this day. Like, if I jog for too long or if I run for too long, you know, if I'm doing anything physical where I'm bouncing around, like, my head starts to hurt. And, you know, and that's because of what happened in the past. So you can imagine these guys. Like, when I got them, I didn't get hit half as hard as dudes in the NFL that gets hit. Now, when you saw Kevin Cobb, when he finally got his shot with Philly, and in the first half of the very first game that he started, you saw Clay Matthews drive his head into the ground, and then he, you know, subsequently missed so many weeks, lost his spot, and, like, the rest was kind of history. Like, if you know anything about the head injury, you know, like, that could cause a chain reaction where this dude might not ever be right. And we kind of laugh and joke with him because we always say, you know, he's always injured. He kind of gets in his own way because some people did think he could end up being a good quarterback. But anytime he had a half-decent string going, he'd get injured. And three times out of those injuries, it's been because of head injuries. So I really do think that he should consider hanging it up because obviously the same thing keeps happening to him. His career, even though he's like 29 years old, his career just, he hasn't been on the field long enough for his career to be threatened by a certain kind of injury. And so I think it's really serious, and I think dude should consider hanging it up.
And he has something to point to. Like, he's not like a lot of these players in the lawsuit who, I mean, because let's face it, football is not that old as a sport in the grand scheme of things. I mean, baseball was played, you know what I'm saying, in the 19th century. Like, but so football is not that old. So a lot of the players that are in this lawsuit didn't know, you know, exactly how bad it is. But with all the studies being done, with this lawsuit being settled, with everything in the news, I mean, he pretty much has a lot to go from that, listen, it may not be worth it in the long term. I mean, you get the same exact injury, and, you know, I know my man has a major headache game. I know he probably popping Motrin on a daily, but, yo,
he's just an unlucky dude, man. I remember a couple of weeks ago he tweaked his knee in training camp just running from one practice field to the other, slipped on a wet mat. I'm like, duh, it's just not meant for you to do this. And especially when we start talking about head injuries, and you know what's going on now because of the head injuries. Like this time, he, you know, dove to the ground and took a knee to the helmet. So, like,
dang.
Man, I think it's just about that time, man.
By the way, man, Casey Mack says baseball is the sport you want to push him to because that gives you longevity and it doesn't discriminate on height. And I just told him baseball also doesn't discriminate on weight.
You don't have to be. You don't have to be in shape or nothing like that.
But anyway,
what you trying to say,
yeah,
Casey
so,
Mack? My son gonna be a little Jimmy Rollins, a little short dude. My wife family tall.
Let's talk about Mark Sanchez, or as Ray Lewis once called him, Mar Sanchez. Who is Mar Sanchez? Anyway, Mark Sanchez bruises throwing shoulder, and now people are saying that maybe Rex was playing him too long. What do you think about that?
Well, he was in the game in the fourth quarter. I mean, you know, game three of the preseason, usually your starter goes maybe a little bit into the third quarter. I don't know. A lot of people, Joe Namath is getting on Rex right now, saying that, you know, he was in there too long of the preseason game against the Giants. Namath actually said, you do not put your quarterback in there in that situation, not the guy that's probably going to be your starter, behind a makeshift offensive line in a preseason game. He said, come on, there was no rhyme or reasoning to that. See, I can see this from both sides. Now, while that's true, like you don't want to put your presumed starter, you know, behind the third-string line, dudes that's trying to make the team against a team, you know, pass rush like the New York Giants. But then at the same time, Mark Sanchez, if this isn't like a Chip Kelly situation where I think you're just saying that it's a quarterback competition to motivate the guy that you want to have the job, if this was truly a quarterback competition, you know, Mark Sanchez was embroiled in one. So you might want to play him as long as possible because Mark Sanchez, even being the starter for all these years, he really hasn't proven that he's head and shoulders above anybody on the roster and that he should automatically be afforded another year as the starting quarterback, even though he's getting paid like one. So I can see both sides. I can see why people are like, why the hell is he in the game in the fourth quarter? And I can also see Rex saying, well, dude need more work. So it's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things, like you just said, I can see both sides of the argument. At the end of the day, man, the Jets have went from a team that everybody thought was on a cusp of having something great to being a complete and utter disaster as a franchise. Like, how far have they fallen, yo?
Yeah.
You know, when they made that run a couple years ago, people was like, this is the team of the future. You know, the team to watch out for. They'll be competing for a championship every year. Football, man, is a crazy sport. Yo, it's like you can go from, like, you know, ish to sugar or sugar to ish in a matter of one season. You just
never
know, man.
I wish you would tell Redskins fans that. I wish you would tell Skins fans that. I'm so tired of talking.
Skins fans have no idea. Speaking of Redskins, RG3 to start the opener versus the Philadelphia Eagles. And Redskin Nation is out of control. Listen, I know I have Redskins fans in my family. I know a lot of Redskins fans I talk to online. I have never seen them go, like, yo, I've never seen them like this. I've seen the Redskins win the Redskins beat my team in a Super Bowl when they weren't this hype. Like, RG3 has done something to those fans. I think RG3 is like Jim Jones, yo. It's like the people's temple. He got the Kool-Aid out and everybody's drinking it because, you know, Dev was telling me about his debate today about Redskins fans. I hear people saying that, you know, they're going to win the Super Bowl.
14-2.
14-2.
This is my thing for people that think like that. And you know, first of all, you know, I talk from a neutral perspective. People think because I'm an Eagles fan, like I'm so tired of hearing that because if anybody knows, like, I dog the Eagles more than I dog any team. So there's no biasness here being a division rival. I'm just calling it like it is. And what I think a lot of people aren't taking into account, like the Redskins ended the season last year on a seven-game run, spectacular seven-game run. Give them all the props in the world for the seven-game run. But I think the seven-game run is one of those things where it masks the problems that the team really had. The seven-game run made everybody forget about the fact that they started 3-6, and you know, the coach basically was conceding the season. Of course, you know, you go on a seven-game run and make the playoffs, that's great. That's all well and good. But I think people just automatically assume that's what we're going to see from the Redskins this year, and the 3-6, like, there's no way in hell that that's going to pop up and show up. And just like you just said, Jimmy, there's nothing promised in the NFL. You can go on a crazy run the year before, and then the next year, in the Redskins' case, you might be back to normal. Or, you know, vice versa. So it's one of those things where I don't think everything was addressed. They didn't have, because of the penalty that was put on them and the Cowboys, they couldn't do much as far as spending money in the offseason. They didn't have high draft picks because of the trades they made with the Rams for RG3 in the first place. So my thing when I talk to Redskins fans, I'm like, where has the improvement come from? Because even if you're going to say RG3 being the rookie of the year and you expect him to improve into his second year, you don't even know that because we don't even know the 100% true state of his knee. We don't know if he's even going to hold up. And that's going to be everybody's excuse if he does go down and the team is bad. That's going to be the excuse. But what they're not realizing is, okay, you're talking all of this big stuff with your chest poked out when you don't even know if your quarterback is 100% healthy. So why wouldn't you tread a little more lightly, you know, when you're making these predictions and everything? Health is a big factor. You know, if anybody loses their starting quarterback or, you know, just some important people on the team, your fortunes can go a whole different way, but it seems like they don't even take any of that into account. Because
man,
run last year, and that was the last thing that the fans saw, we 14-2 this year, and we're going to the Super Bowl.
Yo, they are goo-goo gaga over this guy. I mean, Sports Illustrated is saying he's John Elway already, which pissed me off to no end, considering I'm a huge John Elway fan. But, you know, it's like football is a crazy sport. Nothing is promised. Which is why, as a Broncos fan, that playoff loss hurt so bad because I still, to this day, think we were the better team, but we lost the game. And nothing is promised. And people told me all the time, you guys will be right back next year. No. I mean, you can't just say that in football. Not in the NFL.
Tell the Giants that. They haven't made the playoffs after the two Super Bowls they won in this decade.
Exactly.
It's not promised.
This is my point.
Is not promised.
Nothing is promised in football. This game is crazy. They say it's a game of inches, which it truly is. And you never know. You're gonna win games you shouldn't, and you're gonna lose games that you shouldn't. So I just don't know. I mean, do you have that much faith in Shanahan? But I tell you what, the Redskins fans that I have dealings with, I have never seen them this excited. And one guy told me, though, he's been a Redskins fan since the early 80s. He says they've never really had a player as popular in that position or any kind of glamorous player. I mean, they had Powell Green. He's a cornerback. You can't really celebrate a cornerback like that. You know what I'm saying? So they've never really had, like, a flashy quarterback. They
like
Mark
a superstar quarterback.
Yeah.
I feel you. But at the same time,
they still
have to give RG3 time to prove that he's worth, you know, all of the accolades that he does get. By all accounts, he seems like he's going to be a great quarterback. But they're not even giving him a chance to prove that. You know, you can't say after 1 year he's better than, like, a Joe Theismann or somebody like that. But
I don't even think he was the best quarterback of his class. And the crazy part is, I mean, this is America. They like to set people up for the huge fall. If he doesn't have it, because I also remember Redskins fans, when McNabb was on his way to D.C., telling me how great he was.
Super Bowl.
The Eagles didn't know what they were losing. They were going to the bowl, and they turned on him in a heartbeat. So, you know, it can happen. So it's just interesting,
take a little longer because this is their own. He was drafted by them, so they'll count him as a homegrown. See, McNabb, they were hype when he came, but when he started playing like Philly fans told him he was going to play, then I think they started looking at him as an eagle again. Well, you know, he's their dude. Like, forget that dude. But you're right.
But it's crazy.
They turned on him so quick. So quick.
It's crazy because, you know, the word hater is thrown around way too much when we have sports debates. But, yo, they're really turning me into a hater. Because it's to the point now, yo, where I'd rather see them fail than to see my team win, yo. How crazy is that? And I'm admitting that on the air, yo.
It would have nothing to do with the team. Like, those dudes we talk to sometimes, like players from the team, you know, you can wish those dudes luck. You just wish you could separate them from their, you know, delusional fan base at times. But I don't know, man. I'm just wondering, Jimmy, where is the improvement? Like, where's this vast improvement where people have the nerve to say out of their mouth, we're going to go 13-3, 14-2? Where was the vast improvement in that? Like, you have a quarterback who wasn't able to work on his craft the way he wanted to during the offseason because of his injury.
What new weapons did
you have? Guys
have
on the team who you were ready to throw to the wolves before they made that run last year. So because of that run, are you 100% sure? Are you guaranteeing that those guys on the team are the guys? Like, people like Fred Davis, like, I hear they call his name out, the tight end. They call his name out when they're talking about who they have and how deep they are and this and that. But last season, before the run started, you know, Fred Davis was somebody who wasn't living up to his potential. He had all these tools, but he wasn't living up to the potential. Now everybody on the team is great all of a sudden, when last year the roster was mediocre, you know. And I think it was one of those things where, you know, they got hot. And, of course, this is the NFL. I'm not. You know, before everybody gets upset, I'm not just saying it was a lucky run, but there has to be some kind of luck in any run like that, in any sport, with any team. So that's the stuff that they're not factoring in when they start talking about the team this year. They automatically think, oh, we're going to have like a 3-4 game improvement because of what we did last season. Okay.
Yeah, man. It'll be interesting, man.
This is
one of the reasons why we love football, and we definitely can't wait till it starts, is that reason right there.
Another thing, Jimmy,
know,
that they don't take
I,
into
just,
account, first place brings you a first-place schedule. So
this is absolutely true. I just don't have faith in Shanahan. You know, he once was a Broncos coach. I didn't, you know. But anyway, speaking of Broncos.
Real quick, Jim, before you move on, I kind of look at that as their most solid aspect, though. Like, I don't think this team is an overly talented team like their fan base think they are, but I think the continuity that they're starting to build with the coaching staff, Shanahan might not be the great, you know, genius that everybody thought he was in Denver, but at the same time, he has a vision. The team is not all, you know, in flux like it has been in the past few years. So I think he's a constant that's kind of taking the team in the right direction. And Daniel Snyder is allowing him to do his job, unlike he did with all the coaches in the past. So I think Shanahan is the positive here, but I do agree with
what
you.
About
he's
a,
not what everybody.
What about a Rackpo? What about a Rackpo?
Another one who, you know, they're not really living up to his potential, but I'm pretty sure
if we got
a DC fan to call in now, he's probably the best linebacker in the league.
Here's the thing, though. I thought Shanahan was a very solid coach, but what made me start questioning it was this. I think that he may have been like a little ahead of his time, and the game kind of caught up with his system. But I also look at the success that Gary Kubiak has had running that system in Houston. And don't forget, Gary Kubiak was the offensive coordinator and head assistant when the Broncos won those two championships. And I look at the success he has running in Houston. I start to wonder, like, well, maybe Kubiak was the guy because their offense in Houston looks just like the Denver offense that won the Super Bowl, like the way they move the ball down the field. They even run the same plays, the same bootlegs, the same running plays, the same, I mean, everything. It looks just like that. So I start to wonder, you know, and now we know that he came to D.C. and he put his son in charge. You know, nepotism is still alive and well. But so I start to wonder, like, whether
– I would do the same thing if they
let me. I mean,
me.
I would,
they
too.
Would,
no, not,
they probably
no, not
wouldn't let
him.
Me.
No, keep,
but.
Yeah, keep that money in the family, right? Yeah,
like,
probably not, but, you know, keep that money in the family, man. Ain't nothing wrong with that. But I'm just saying, I start to wonder whether Kubiak was a bigger part of the puzzle than I initially thought when watching those teams. But that's, you know,
either that,
you never know. But
either that or he was a good teacher. So either or. Because, you know, we give a lot of other coaches props for their tree. Maybe he's just a good old apple that fell from the tree. Or
Maybe
he was the hidden success. Maybe he was the next winner to Phil Jackson. I don't know.
Speaking of the Broncos, right, Joe Flacco, he has a banner promoting the game. The banner also includes Peyton Manning. But it's causing a stir amongst Broncos Nation because they want the banner down because it's a huge banner of Joe Flacco in
on their stadium.
On their stadium. Listen, I try to be objective, even though this is my team. They're promoting the game. I mean, it is what it is. So I'm not one of the Broncos fans that's bitching about it because I understand it's still a business. They're promoting the game. And the fact that you guys are bitching about it is bringing attention to it anyway. So mission accomplished.
I think what makes it worse for Broncos fans is that this is the team that put them out of the playoffs and then subsequently went on to win the NFL, you know, and win the Super Bowl. So that might have a little bit to do with it. Like, I can see their beef, like, looking at the photo right now. Like, it's a huge banner outside of their field. But they also have to remember that this is the kickoff game. This isn't like one of, you know, eight kickoffs going on at 1 o'clock on Sunday. This is the only game in town. This is Thursday night. This is, you know, the new thing they've been doing for like the last decade to start the season. So you have to know that the NFL are going to market the game like this. So I think it's one of those things you have to get over it. I can understand from a fan perspective because fans are basically short for fanatics. So you don't really want to see the guy who went on to beat your team and all that in a three-story banner hanging off your stadium. They're also upset because downtown they have banners and flyers and pictures of Flacco all around to promote the game as well. And they actually started a petition to try to get that stuff taken down. I think they might be overreacting a little bit. But
here's my thing, right? Here's my thing. I'm going to be completely honest with you. I'd be more offended if they had Raheem Moore on that poster because at the end of the day, I'm still pissed about that game. I don't even know how I'm going to watch that game. I might watch that game with the volume off because you know they're going to reference the old game every 5 minutes and I won't be able to take it. So I'm going to literally watch
it. So you might.
Yeah, man. Like, it's going to be difficult to watch the game because it's going to be a long season because basically the way that game ended, what that means is our regular season means nothing. I mean, what could we do? We went 13-3.
Super Bowl or bust.
Yeah, we went 13-3 with home field throughout. So our regular season right now means nothing. There's nothing that we really can do in the regular season. So, you know, it's going to be difficult. But I also understand the NFL has to promote that game. Like you said, it's a big game. It's the opening game. It's big for the sport. So, I mean, it is what it is, man. I'm not one of those fans that have, you know, that's bitching about it. But
and the game, first of all, they're the champs. So the game probably should be in Baltimore. You know what I mean? And I heard that it was supposed to be scheduled in Baltimore, but the Orioles owner did whatever he had to do to get it away from there. I guess it would be messing up revenue for some things going on for the Orioles. So he fought against that. So the game, you know, you're the champs. Why should the champs have to go on the road to open up the season anyway? But that's a whole different thing.
Shout out to Casey Mack, who's been rocking with us all night on Twitter. He says, somebody needs the right to wear spit on the Flacco banner. Hashtag Beach Street.
Ramo!
For those
before we get out of here,
yo,
man, shout out to Nami, who locked down the number 3 cornerback position in San Francisco. Watch some time.
Yeah,
watch Nami going to the Pro Bowl this year.
Got his chick now. You never know, man. Nami, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fact that Nami went from being considered one of the, like, considered actually arguably the best corner in the game and now number 3, I mean, you know, it is what it is.
Real quick, Jim, they said in 39 pass coverage snaps this preseason, he's only allowed 1 catch for 5 yards. So Nami out there locking up until they play the Giants.
So my question is, how good are the Niners going to be? I don't even want to know, man.
Yeah.
Anyway, man, it's time for us to get out of here. Thanks again for joining us in the War Room, good people. Shout out to everybody who rocked with us on Facebook or Twitter. We apologize about the chat room. For the calls we didn't get to we apologize. Call us back next week. We'll get you on the air. Tune in next week, same time, same place. We do our 4th annual NFL season kickoff special Also, shout out to Fred. You know, Fred that joined us, Fred Perdue, from Heavy in the Games, to, you know, talk a little bit about college football. So, you know, like I said, next week, NFL Open Week, you got to kick it with us. Be sure to catch our conversations on Facebook, Twitter, and our videos on warroomsportstv.com. Until next time, everybody.
Robert Klemko, Sports Illustrated, to be with us.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Next week, we'll definitely have Robert Klemko of Sports Illustrated to come kick it with us about some NFL talk. But anyway, like I said, don't accept mediocrity. Be steadfast in the war against ignorance, and we'll see you chumps on top.
Know the blueprint.
Yo,
every Thursday, 6 to 8, they do this. Shout out to Dez, PJ, B. Austin, Doc Bay on replay. WarRoomSports.com. Get that mobile app. It's not dialed.
Call it
323, working 0012. They be going and you sensitive, then oh well.
Yeah.
Physical podcast, the tough push. Showtime like magic in the block push.
Magic.
Listen live, push one to join in. Rip your team or listen for your enjoyment. Hip hop dollars, pit stop and knowledge. Should be in sports credits, I ain't talking college. Five guys, no beef though. Sports are secret, but the streets know. Belafonte, I got a G flow. KC, royalty, I'm in beast mode. 2 hours, get your game up. Who's the best in sports cast? You better name us.
War Room Sports.
War Room Sports, www.warroomsports.com. What? Ain't no more to it.